If the roar of the crowd gives you goosebumps, cashing a slip makes you grin, and above all, you love making your bookie cry, then you're in the right place. The number one spot for premier betting advice and wild opinions, shared with a fan base like no other. Welcome home. This is the Punch List MMA Podcast. Here are your hosts, Dale Lippin and Trey Van Buskirk.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? You are tuned into the newest edition of the Punch List MMA Podcast. It's your boy Dale Lippin in here, hanging out. I say this every week, man, but it doesn't change, at least not very often. My partner in crime, my sidekick, the Robin to my Batman, the Wonder Woman to my Aquaman, Trey Van Buskirk. How are you, man?
Robin Hood and Wonder Woman? We're going that route?
Did I say Robin Hood or I say Robin?
What's the difference?
We're talking about Robin Hood is the Prince of Thieves, and it's like a completely different thing. And then Robin is the Boy Wonder.
Dude, I'm moving a little slow. I know this past weekend we were stating our independence, but I am today stating my independence from alcohol. I got wasted.
I did too. So my plan was 1776, right? So I was going to have 17 beers over the course of 7 to 6 hours or 6 to 7 hours. Oh. And I superseded it. I went full George Orwell. I went 1984, man. This was 2001, A Space Odyssey, man. I had a great day, bro. It was a good day.
I didn't stay stateside. I didn't stay domestic, dude. I went international waters. I went with a lot of tequila.
Oh,
crushed me.
Okay. Yeah, I just went beer, man. I went beer and a lot of it. So safe to say I'm feeling it now. I essentially, you know, everything fit a little bit tighter today at work. The face is a little bit redder than it normally is. You know, the digestive system is a mess. Took a good 30-minute long bathroom break on the company dime today because that first cup of coffee hit your boy and it was bad news bears, bro. Let me tell you, there's nothing like pounding 20 beers and then drinking some coffee the next day. It's a mess, bro.
Dude, I hope you retained all that protein from Stay Classy though.
You know what? I tried the best I could. I actually have some leftover ribs in front of me right here because Tuesdays, as you know, in my house are an absolute whirlwind. So normally what we're doing is I'm sucking down dinner right before we go live, even though it's 9:30 at night, because it's the only time I get to eat after I get all the kids laid down. So yeah, it was interesting, man. It was an interesting 4th of July, and we're trying to make the best of it right now. I currently have put my phone away so you don't get all the buzzing alerts here. I've got quite a bit of money on this Phil Mickelson Bryson DeChambeau match right now. So I will give this podcast my undivided attention, but my wallet is currently has the attention elsewhere.
That sounds good. Well, for those that celebrated 4th of July in style, I hope you truly did it in style, Dale. Guys, the most American day, the most American company. If you're not aware, be aware. AllegianceClothing.com. Guys, go check it out. I'm rocking one of their shirts right now. Epic fit. I did drink a lot. I ate too much, but the tapered fit makes your boy still look in shape. Oh, you're rocking it too.
Yeah, bro. Come on.
Well, you probably went on AllegianceClothing.com. You typed in that code PUNCH and you got 15% off site wide.
Here's how off my game I am. I didn't even realize you were leading me into an ad read there, and I didn't even do an ad read. I literally just talked about what I ate
and talking about shitting on a company dime, dude.
Yeah, I really did. So yeah, if you go to freaking Stay Classy Meats and use promo code PUNCH, you can save 10% on the entire thing. Or no, FIST. Sorry, dude, I'm a mess right now. We're using FIST. We're saving 10%. This is not a preview of things to come. I promise this. The rest of the show will run like a well-oiled machine.
You know what it is? It's like we're like one of those small-time plays, and we have an opportunity to go on Broadway right now. Yeah. And we know it. Our Broadway UFC 264, one of the biggest cards maybe of the year, and we're already fumbling, dude.
I don't think we're fumbling, but we're off to a rocky start, you know. Forgot came out with our jersey on backwards, but we'll get it together. It's no big deal, man. It's no big deal whatsoever. Some housekeeping stuff. This weekend we will be doing a joint episode with the Run It Back boys. We're doing a Hot Ones challenge. We're going to try to get Dober locked on for that. And then we have two Punch List alum fighting on this card. And not only are they fighting on this card, but they're fighting each other. Oh. And you and I are on opposite ends of this. So spoiler alert, if you know who these people are, that will be the people's main event tonight.
Absolutely.
All right. Do you want to just, we've got a heavy card here. This thing is thicker than a Snicker. Do you want to get on it or what do you want to do?
Let's do it. Let's dive right in.
We're going to dive right into it. All right. First fight on the main card. I don't know why this is on the pay-per-view portion, but I kind of do. Your boy, Sugar Sean O'Malley at 13-1, taking on Chris Moutinho. Moutinho's at 9-4. Pretty much an unbettable fight here as far as I'm concerned, unless you really hate Sean O'Malley enough to go against him. Sean O'Malley would probably be the most utilized parlay piece of the evening, I would imagine. Minus 900 against Moutinho here at plus 550 over under on rounds is at 1.5. How do you feel about this? This should be a fight that Sean O'Malley wins. There was an infinite number of more suitable suitors that rose to the occasion and tried to throw their hat in the ring. And it appears that Team O'Malley said, nah, let's give my boy another highlight.
Question. When you got a minus 900 here, are the props, are you getting any fair prices on that? Sean O'Malley by KO. Obviously everyone's seeking that. Where can you get that right now?
Oh man, I'm honestly not sure, but that's the kind of stuff you want to look for when it comes to something like this, especially when on a fight where there appears to be a predetermined outcome, right? You either go against the grain or you cut with the grain on that, depending on how much you like or dislike the person or how, I don't know, I guess you'd say how risky you want to be with your money. As it stands right now, the book that we do not speak of only has props out on the Poirier versus Connor fight. Usually other fight props show themselves sometime around the Thursday to Friday mark. So we can always circle back and update that. But I would be looking at O'Malley by knockout. Even then, you're going to get a more digestible number, but it's not going to be fun. You're still probably looking at the minus 200 range, minus 250 for O'Malley by KO.
You know, it's never the worst thing to take a couple dollars and throw it on the gray horse, you know? Yeah. It might not be the favorite, but you never know. Sean O'Malley, as much as he's going to be switching stances, being as flashy as possible, make it the sugar show at the end of the day, he should get it done. Crazier things have happened. I will say, if you go back and watch Chris's fights, the dude comes to fight. He's super competitive. And if you want to, conspiracy theory, if he comes in and looks super lackluster, maybe Sean O'Malley's team paid him off to get that little can looking pretty horrible.
I don't know. I mean, boy, at this point, if you're going to pay somebody to throw a fight one way or the other, it's going to be an opportunity to make more money than a plus 500. If we're looking at, if I'm looking at the most likely fixes in kind of fight, I'm looking for somebody that's fighting Kayla Harrison or something like that. Something where you can get absolutely stupid money. Another great opportunity if you were to talk about throwing in, or putting a fix in. The Clay Collard versus Anthony Pettis was a good opportunity for you because Clay Collard was a sizable underdog there. He was probably, I don't know if he was in the plus 550 range, but there weren't a whole lot of people outside of diehard Clay Collard stands that were giving him much of a chance in that fight. He went out and performed rather well against Anthony Pettis and got that W. I'm not touching Chris Moutinho here. I have no desire to play him, not even out of the spite that I have in my heart for Sean O'Malley's team. Sean O'Malley himself doesn't seem like that terrible of a guy, a little bit annoying, but personal attacks aside, he's a very talented fighter. He should beat a guy like Chris Moutinho. He should. And I expect him to. And I don't have a price point that I think that's going to be palatable for me, because I don't want him to come out and do the whole "I'm a cat playing with my food" thing, right? I hate that. Right.
It's a scary spot regardless, though. It's a stay busy fight. He wants those pay-per-view points.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing and the most intriguing thing is going to be the post-fight speech where he talks about, maybe dismissing the haters, why he didn't choose Ricky Simone. Was it the weight? Were there other wrestlers that he didn't want to partake in? He took a can. He's getting a can. Hopefully he finishes it flashy and puts another can in his record.
See, that's the thing, though, is I don't think it's fair to call Moutinho a can. And I'm not trying to correct you. I don't think it's – I mean, the guy's 9-4 as a professional fighter. The problem is he's just not at the skill level, at least that we've seen, as Sean O'Malley. to me personally, coming from the boxing world, a can is a guy with a near 500 record that loses fights that he should win. And Chris Montino has shown himself to be very competitive on a regional circuit against quality competition. Is it UFC caliber? No. Is this a fight that Sean O'Malley should easily win? Yes. But cans are the guys that Michael Venom Page beats, not the guys that Sean O'Malley has beaten thus far. Now, Montino could come out there and just look like a heated up bag of dog shit, and I'll eat my words. But, you know, the biggest thing with O'Malley is I know with some fighters, it was they wanted more time. Some fighters, they wanted the weight. Sometimes other fighters, they wanted O'Malley to come up 10 pounds or 5 pounds or catch weight. There was quite a few people that couldn't make their arrangement on such short notice, but there were some that wanted it as well. So,
right.
Again, Team O'Malley saw fit. This guy stepped up. I hope he gets it done. It'll change his life forever if he can get a W. I hope he changes his life forever. It already has changed his life forever because now people know his name. And I guarantee you, even after this O'Malley fight, as long as it doesn't turn into a who's the kid that quit on his stool a year ago? Austin Hubbard. Max Roshkoff.
Yeah, Roshkoff. That's right.
As long as this doesn't turn into a Roshkoff situation, he'll get another fight in the UFC. They'll probably make it something a little bit more palatable for him, something he probably has a better chance if this one's not as competitive, something more akin to his skill level. And maybe he'll be able to stay on the roster for a little bit. It's already changing his life, but I hope the best for him moving forward. All right.
Absolutely.
Next fight. Irene Aldana taking on Yana Kunitskaya. Kunitskaya at a plus 100. Irene Aldana at a minus 120. Am I getting that right? Mm-hmm. And then we're looking at records being Kunitskaya is at 14-5 mark, and Aldana is at 12-6. I'll let you go first on this one, man, because you already know where I'm going right off the rip.
Hey, this is as close to a pick 'em as you're going to get, though, and you're still going to go underdog. I'm taking it. Yes, it's science. It is science. You know, Yana, she's an output striker. She doesn't cover up that well. Here's the thing. I'm going to go back to some previous fights. You go into a Caitlin Vieira fight. She comes in way smaller. I thought Caitlin could like wrestle her to death. And, you know, Yana's got good takedowns. She can wrestle when she needs to, but obviously Yana proved me wrong. She was able to outmuscle Caitlin a little bit. Irene, if you recall, she fought Caitlin as well, but KO'd her. She was on the Usman Covington card. Mm-hmm. I think that Irene's a little bit interesting. She's not a Chukagan type fighter, but she is long. She is lanky. She can utilize that reach. I think that could pose some concern. But the thing is, unless you're going to get someone that's going to out-muscle Yana, I think Yana is elusive enough. She has good footwork. She can mix in takedowns. She can, you know, pick her shots where she wants. And I think she's the more complete fighter. So I'm going to go Yana. I think this is going to be a very boring fight. I think Yana by decision is a good play if you want to get a little bit more value. But that's kind of where I'm falling.
My big thing with Kunitskaya is that the skill level in women's MMA, and we've talked about this pretty extensively, the skill level in women's MMA, when they talk about there being levels, there's definitely a level to when it comes to skills in women's MMA. And one of the hardest skill sets I think that other women have a hard time offsetting is the grinder, right? Mm-hmm. The chick that is physically imposing, that can force their will on you, that can hold you down, hold you against the cage, and maybe just outwork you, even if they're not doing a ton of damage, but just can work harder than you're working. And Kunitskaya, for all, you know, whatever, the pomp and circumstance, the little La Femme Nikita, Foxy, Yana, Kunitskaya stuff, she is a grinder. She's not afraid to bleed. She's not afraid to be in a super ugly, boring fight. She does not care if you think she's boring at all. She will hold you against the cage. Mm-hmm. She'll drag you down. She'll pepper punch you to death until you make her work harder than that. And if you can't, you're in for a 15-minute slow waterboarding on pay-per-view or live TV, wherever you're at on the bout order. Kunitskaya does not care. She fights every fight exactly the same. She'll start out at range. She'll throw the jab to close the distance. She'll rush you. She'll push you up against the cage. She'll try to get behind or underneath the hips and drag you to the ground. It's going to be the same thing with Aldana. Same thing. And don't forget, Aldana's coming off a knee injury. So what's her movement going to look like? What's her lateral movement going to look like? Is she going to be able to cut angles and get off the center line and be active with her hips and escape a chick like Yana Kunitskaya? I feel like Yana Kunitskaya is a higher level Roxanne Modafari. I will bet Kunitskaya against absolutely, not absolutely everybody, but just damn near about everybody else, because her skill set, while not great, gives most women fits. And I do not believe that Aldana, despite having the win over Ketlin Vieira, like you said, I'm not all the way sold on her yet. I need more quality wins. You know, I like Aldana a lot. I think she's very talented, but a grinder when it comes to women's MMA, bro, it's hard for me to, especially at plus money. I really enjoy that a lot. So I'm staying with the science. I'm staying betting women's underdogs regardless, but also because I wholeheartedly believe that Yana Kunitskaya is going to win this fight, not just because the tongue-in-cheek thing that we have where we bet women's underdogs every time.
No. I think she's a more complete fighter through and through.
Yeah. Her striking's not as clean, but I think that she can win the fight anywhere. She's going to be physically stronger and has a more imposing style. Now, if she gets cracked, we'll see, because she does get busted up in fights, but we'll see. Well,
and plus, I mean, how daunting, dude. You look across the cage and you see your hubby, Thiago Santos, with that big fucking hammer of Thor on his cage side. I mean, I'd freak out. I'd be nervous.
Yeah, but see, that's just it, though. She should be used to what it's like being in that scared situation then. If you've got that behemoth around you all the time, you got to be comfortable in the uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
100%. Yeah.
All right, man. Ty Tuivasa at 12-3, taking on Greg Hardy at 7-3. Tuivasa's at a -130. Greg Hardy +110. The Prince of War, Greg Hardy. Let's talk about this one objectively. Let's do something different here. Let's set aside the hate for Greg Hardy, and let's talk about this fight the way as if we don't.
It's going to be tough.
As if we don't despise Greg Hardy. Let's talk about it normally. Do you want to go first here? Or you want me to do it?
Fuck Greg Hardy. Yeah, sorry. You go first.
Okay. All right. So I think that Ty Tuivasa is going to present some problems for Greg Hardy here.
I don't.
Now, that being said, What makes me nervous is that Greg Hardy does a couple things that will give a guy like Tuivasa something to think about. And with Tuivasa, my concern with him becomes I don't want to say he doesn't take people seriously, but I don't know how serious he takes himself, right? Like, he's a slugger. He's a brawler. He's a fan favorite. He wants to have a good time. Greg Hardy, on the other hand, appears to be, for all intents and purposes, on a mission to prove to people that he's a legitimate martial artist. Mm-hmm. And a win over a guy who was formerly ranked, if I'm not mistaken, at one point, Tuivasa was in the top 15 before release and bring back or whatever that was. For a while there, Tuivasa looked like the next big thing. This is a great chance against legit competition for Greg Hardy to show how he's progressing. Like, this is the level of progression that you want to see with a guy like Greg Hardy. They're slowly bringing him up. The Volkov fight we saw was too much, and they tapered him back. But the Jorgen De Castros of the world, the Alan Crowders of the world, those were the guys that were at his skill, and it looks like he's probably passed them a little bit. Now he's on to the Ty Tuivasas of the world. He's got to win this fight, or I don't know what you do with him after this point. I'm thankful that they didn't give him the co-main event spot, which I was worried that they were going to do there for a little bit. But this is a reasonable step up for him. Ty Tuivasa doesn't take everybody very seriously, and he's willing to engage in firefights. Like, he's literally in there swinging with guys like Mark Hunt and Sal Palala, or Palele, however you want to say his last name. And he's used to getting cracked. He's used to being in dog fights. He's used to being hit with the big guys, and he wants to test the chin. He wants to test the meathead. Greg Hardy's not going to wrestle him. He doesn't have the cardio for it.
Right.
So they're going to engage in a brawl.
Yeah.
if Greg Hardy doesn't knock him out, it's going to get real ugly real fast. So I don't know. I don't really know confidently where to go here. I like Tuivasa in the sense I think he's a better mixed martial artist and he should win this fight. But I have a weird, weird feeling that something's going to happen and Greg Hardy's going to catch him because Tuivasa is going to be disrespectful.
Yeah, this fight's interesting because both these fighters have one really, really apparent kryptonite, and that is wrestling.
Yeah.
Now, to your point, neither one of them is going to wrestle.
Right.
But I think that you can see the blueprint on Greg Hardy. He's a guy that likes to start off fast and has zero cardio, which totally shocks me because being the more quote-unquote athletic guy coming from the NFL, you'd think a more athletic person would know how to hone in his cardio and elongate that over 15 minutes. He doesn't. He throws it all out there in the first round. We've seen his evolution, putting in the leg kicks, mixing it up and down. But if after 1.5 rounds he doesn't have his inhaler, he dies.
Right.
I think Tai Tuivasa, if he comes in like a business guy and says, hey, I need to weather the first round. I need to weather that storm, drain his cardio, and then start brawling and watch Greg Hardy not be able to lift his hands up because he's too fucking tired. Tai Tuivasa knows he doesn't want to wrestle to grind him. So I think if he can just stay on the outside and move around a little bit and not engage that first round, it's great. I don't think he's going to wrestle or try and do anything close quarters because he's dealt with that before and he doesn't like it. We saw that in the Sergey Spivak fight. We saw that in the Blagoa Ivanov fight. Those are fights that like he engaged and he was on the bad end of that on both those fights.
Yeah.
I think he stays away. The first round is going to be like 3 shots landed. The over 1.5 in this fight is the most juicy thing on the planet. And that is like, it's hard to say that for any type of heavyweight fight, but over 1.5, I think both these guys are going to either conserve or Tai Tuivasa is not going to engage in that first round and get it done in the later rounds.
That's interesting. That's an interesting going with the juice on the over 1.5. Mm-hmm. My, honestly, like I said, my concern with Ty or Tuivasa rather is just him being taking it like a serious fight, knowing full well that the guy across from him is in fact dangerous and respecting him enough to execute a game plan to win the fight. To your point about the cardio with Greg Hardy, while he may be the more athletic guy physically, football cardio is different than fight cardio. The other side of that coin is that we're so far removed from football now.
Right.
You don't have an excuse for having bad fight cardio.
Right.
Like if you're a year in, sure. But now there's no excuse. You've been on this path for several years now, something that you're saying that you take seriously. You've got to step your fight cardio up. And I understand you're a big guy moving around, but when you got guys like C-level Cain Velasquez out there or guys like Volkov or Cyril Gane, or you know, even Horsemeat Overeem or whatever, there are heavyweights out there. Hell, Tanner Boser has a great output at heavyweight. Yeah. There's a lot of guys out there that can move very well and have a decent output at heavyweight. At a certain point, especially when I look at a guy like Greg Hardy and I see that there's room for muscle still, he still carries around a lot of jiggle in the middle. There's room for improvement there, and I think he knows that. We'll see if he made the adjustments. That is a decent plus money line on Greg Hardy. I made a promise a long time ago that I was never going to bet on Greg Hardy to win a fight. And I'm not, I will hold true to my word here, but this is a dangerous fight. If you're on Team Tuivasa, very dangerous fight.
What is also extremely interesting about this fight is the after fight.
Yeah.
The shotgunning of a beer.
Do you think the shoey happens?
The shoey absolutely happens in a sold out T-Mobile Arena. I'm just thinking this. I'm thinking if Tai Tuivasa wins,
yep.
And anyone that's listening to this podcast videos themselves doing a shoey,
yep.
Sends it to us.
Yep, like last time.
They get in the pirate wheel and yep. Chance to win beer money.
Let's do one better.
Okay. Up it.
Let's do one better. I love it. If Tai Tuivasa wins and you do a shoey and send it to us, we will compile all the videos and we will post them and allow Punchless Nation to vote on who had the best one. And if you had the best one, we will send you a no longer in circulation Punchless t-shirt.
Yes.
And we'll buy you a 6-pack of beer.
Craft.
Yeah, craft, whatever. You tell me whatever you want. Triple IPAs. I don't give a hoot.
Love it.
Do we have all sizes of shirts left?
No, but if a big dude's rocking a small, you know, a fat guy in a little t-shirt, dude, I'll make you smile.
That's all right.
Make
you smile too. Yeah, give it to your old lady. Give it to your kid. Whatever. You're getting a t-shirt. Whether it fits you or not, we won't be able to say, but you'll get a super comfortable ultra premium Allegiance tee or a punchless tee made by Allegiance.
Use it as a washcloth. I don't give a shit.
I don't care what you do. You're going to get one. You're going to get a t-shirt and a six pack of beer. That's fine. All right. But Ty Tuivasa has to win, and you have to send us a video to our Instagram at punchlistmma. And if you don't have Instagram, shoot it to us in an email, chat@punchlistmma.com.
Yeah.
So got to be a shoey too. If you don't know what a shoey is, watch what happens after Ty wins, or Google is your best friend.
There you go.
Yeah. And it better be good. It better be good. We had a couple submissions last time, and they were all good, man. Everybody that sent us a shoey last time was great.
Dude, how is that? That lad from New Zealand that was doing it in the rain.
He was out in the rain. Did one. Yeah. And then how about this? What was it? He like said he didn't even like, we were going to send him a shirt, and it was like $160 just to mail him the shirt. And he was like, nah, man, forget it. I just love you guys. And I was like, all right, bro, that works too, man. Sorry.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, sorry. We're broke, dude. Sorry.
It's just like, bro, this is a $20 t-shirt. I'm going to spend $160 to send it to you. This is a $180 hit, bro. And he was like, don't worry about it, man.
That guy is sick.
Yes. Oh, man. All right. Co-main event of the evening. Gilbert Burns taking on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. We're calling him Wonderboy, even though he's 40 years old. And I was saying this, I've been saying this for years, long before Colby started on it. But yes, we're calling him Wonderboy, even though he's 40 years old. He's 16-4 as a professional mixed martial artist, taking on Gilbert Burns at 19-4. 175 or 170 pound tilt here, Trey, not the 155 where Gilbert Burns started. It looks like he's at 170 to stay now. What do you make of this? Does Wonderboy get it done? You know, I have my feelings about this. What do you think, buddy?
Man, all credit to Gilbert Burns for taking this fight, man. Nobody wants to fight Wonderboy for one reason, one reason only. He's so awkward and unorthodox. It makes you look like shit as a fighter. Now, I think that Gilbert Burns always has a plan when he comes in, and he executes it really well. He utilizes those feints, a little bit of that dirty boxing to set up that ground control, get some ground and pound and exercise the really good jiu-jitsu. Stephen Thompson, though, talk about a guy who's got the length, he's got the reach, he's got that karate stance, he's, you know, got those switch kicks, question mark kicks. He never lets you get into a rhythm. And I think for Gilbert Burns, that's the problem, is he's not going to be able to improvise when the rhythm is thrown off. So I know he's 40 years old. I know his chin has seen some days. Gilbert Burns by KO, I know a lot of people have been talking about that, but I just think that Stephen Thompson is also a decision wizard, man. He's a guy that can make it long, make it boring. He's fine doing that. He's not going to come out of the gate firing. He's going to play to a pace, but throw the pace off of who he's up against. I like Thompson. I like him by decision. Another fight that I don't think is going to be that entertaining, hence why Stephen Thompson's never going to get a main event slot unless he gets a title shot, which, you know, he could call for after this. But 205 Madison Square Garden versus Tyron Woodley, hands down one of the most boring fights of all time. Dude, that's what you're getting with Stephen Thompson in every single fight.
I don't necessarily know that he's the most boring. I mean, you're really painting him out like he's Bob Ross on melatonin. I think he's very exciting to fight. Or watch fight. I think his fights against Tyron Woodley were god awful, but I think that's more to both of those gentlemen wanting the other guy to do the work for them more than anything else. You're talking about Stephen Thompson, who beat Robert Whittaker. Stephen Thompson, who's only lost four fights since 2012. I mean, he's lost four fights in his entire UFC tenure since starting back in 2012. Multiple time world, what is it, karate and point kickboxing champion. I mean, the dude is next level. To your point, though, the chin has looked a little rocky at times. Both Tyron Woodley fights, he got rocked. The Darren Till fight was kind of hit and miss. And I thought maybe Darren Till maybe got a little bit of a gift there. And then Anthony Pettis, you know, what are you going to do with that, man? what are you going to do with that Pettis knockout? I mean, it is what it is, right? Was it an anomaly? Maybe. My concern is at some point in time, your body reminds you that you're 40.
Yeah.
Your body reminds you that this is a young man's game. Combat is a young man's game. And Stephen Wonderboy Thompson's getting a little bit older. I wholeheartedly believe that Stephen Thompson should win this fight. There is a weird little scratch in the back of my head, though, that says Gilbert Burns is going to knock him out. Right. And I'm scared for that because, honestly, like I said, what, last week or the week before, I don't see a scenario that exists in the world where Stephen Wonderboy Thompson gets another title shot, because Usman is going to fight Covington. And then the winner of that is going to fight Leon Edwards. And that whole saga will not be wrapped up until this time next year. So what do you do with Wonderboy again? Even if he beats Gilbert Burns, and let's say that he does, what do you do with him? If you can't have him fight Leon Edwards. Leon Edwards won't fight him. We've already established that. He won't fight Wonderboy. Like, that's not going to happen. He's not going to jeopardize that. Colby's not going to do it. Usman's not going to do it. What do you have him do? You have him, you keep feeding him killers and hope that he loses. And I think that's what they're doing here.
You think got putting the conspiracy hat on right here?
I'm not putting the conspiracy hat on, but I think that a draw and arguably one of the more boring 5-round decisions you've ever seen in your life, and on a card as of the magnitude of 205, you seriously depleted your stock with the boss. You depreciated your stock big time with that. He is a fan favorite. There's no doubt about it. I think the guy's got a million subs on YouTube and a bunch of other stuff. There's no doubt that people like Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. And if he was the champ, he might move a needle. But at this point, people aren't lining up at the ticket booth to bet and see and buy tickets to see Stephen Wonderboy Thompson fight. He doesn't have that it. He has the talent, but he doesn't have the factor, the it factor. He just doesn't have it. And he doesn't have it at 40, right? He may have had it with the Dan Stigeon knockout, and then he lost to Matt Brown, and then he went off. He just started rattling off crazy freaking win after win after win. But then you put out the Tyron Woodley performances, and it's like, nah, bro, I can't with this. I can't. The point karate shit only works for so long. People are only so excited about it for so long. Ask Lyoto Machida, man. They just, I'm done with this now. It's cool for a little bit. Somebody figured it out. All right. On to the next. So
what are you doing?
I don't know, man. Gilbert Burns takedowns, you know, what's he average? Like two per fight, three per fight. I Wonderboy stopped like some stupid number, like 17 of his last 20 takedown attempts. People were going at him or something like that. I mean, he's got
insane takedown. Yeah. That's he's going to be way rangier, way taller. Yeah. Dude, this is a former 155er. Right. I don't think he's going to be able to close the distance.
Don't forget the last 155er that Wonderboy fought knocked him out.
That's true.
Little fast guys, little bumblebees, you know, yeah. Hit you with some weird shit. And Gilbert's going to touch him once. We know that. He's going to touch him once. We absolutely know that. So how does Wonderboy respond? This one is, I'd say maybe even dog or pass, bro. I don't know. This one has me. This is my most on the fence that I am for this one. I part of me just says take Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. He's lost four times since 2012. He's the safest. He's safe money. And he just beat up Gilbert Burns' best friend and Vicente Luque. Don't forget, he just beat up, essentially just beat Burns by fighting Vicente Luque.
If I saw Thompson, I would just walk up to him and I'd be like, Wonder Boy, what is the secret of your power?
Yeah.
That's what I would ask him. And then he'd just question mark kick me into fucking oblivion.
I told you Wonder Boy was at the Ram FC event.
Oh, yeah.
And just a steady line of chicks walking up to him all night. Just all night.
Yeah. Didn't have to move out of the seat. He's like, hey, I can't talk to you. I got to talk to your dad for permission first.
Yeah. Just, I, you say that, but I bet you Wonderboy, there's a reason why he's 40 and single. Wonderboy, probably, there's no need for him to be. He's probably just backstroking like Scrooge McDuck. Just no doubt about it. But he, I mean, look, he walked by me and, you know, I'm not 170 pounds, but he didn't look very big. And this was weeks ago. So he wasn't like in full blown camp, but he doesn't look like the biggest guy I've ever seen. So
it's interesting because in the embedded, he looks a little chunky right now. I know he's not.
He looked a little thick, didn't he? He looked a little thick. Did you notice that when he's a little tight? He looked a little. You know what he looked like? Huh. He looked like he was 40 years old.
Yeah.
That's what he looked like. Shit. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. As of right now, I'm leaning Wonder Boy, but that is subject to change. All right. Let's talk about the main event of the evening. Dustin Poirier, 27-6. Conor McGregor, 22-5. The series tied 1-1. We all know what happened the first time. We all know what happened the second time. We're finally going to get things settled here in round three. What do you think here, Trey? Because I'm back and forth on this fight as well. I've got sneaky feelings. I've got real feelings. I've got heart feelings. I've got wallet feelings. Where are you at here? Because you are the consummate Conor McGregor fanboy here. So where are you at?
You know, you can't get analytical about this. I think you can't, because you know what each guy possesses, and you know where the vulnerabilities lie. You know where the insecurities are. And I say the insecurities because Conor McGregor, you know, tweeting on Twitter, stating the first one to shoot for a takedown is a dusty bitch. He doesn't want that to happen. If I was Mike Brown, Dustin Poirier's coach, I'd say, dude, we are going to Khabib this shit. We are going to shoot right off the rip, and we are going to grind him. We're going to try and get his back flat on the mat in the center of the octagon, not allow him to butt scoot all the way back to the cage to get back up. We are going to drown him. But here's the thing. Conor is always better in the run back. He's like the guy that goes to school and takes a test and he's like, ah, fuck, I don't need to study, and gets an F. And then he's like, all right, fine. Let me go back. Let me actually put in the work, and then I'll get the B to get the degree. You know what I mean? Conor McGregor is at plus money right now. If you don't think that is tearing Conor apart, the biggest egomaniac on the planet, it is. The one thing, and I'll give you some insider insight here, is I have a friend who works in Costa Mesa, an auto shop, and he's had a secret octagon set up in Costa Mesa.
Okay.
And my friend, insider tip, has been saying that he has not been working out that hard. He's been hanging out, doing his training session, then barbecuing in the back alley with the boys. So I don't know. But then I see people come out and say, like, oh, without a doubt, like, he's focused, he's ready to go. Is it all a show? I don't know. But I do know that Conor is an egomaniac. He's plus money. And if he was going to come back and do it, he's going to do it now. It's already come out and said, Dana White said, this is for the lightweight strap. Whoever wins this is going to fight Charles Oliveira. There's a lot on the line. This is another one of Conor McGregor's carved out paths to get back and retain a title.
Interesting. So you're going Conor.
I'm going Conor because I think that all those little mind games he's played with Dustin, as much as Dustin says it's the yesteryear of him dealing with mean Conor and mentally just going, you know, berserk, those are going to eat at him. They're going to eat at him when he's at weigh-ins, the draw that he brings in front of a large crowd. I mean, you have to think, when you're fighting on a pay-per-view on a Conor McGregor card, the aura, the feel, everything is completely different. You can think you're as determined and focused as ever, but I mean, it's a different ball game.
It's, I don't know, man.
No.
P-head. Yep. I'm coming for you, P-head.
Yep.
Shitty hillbilly.
Look, man, here's the thing, right? Is that, bro, so, all right, so this is not a knock on you here. To get more analytical than you got here, from a analytics perspective, how it shakes out, both of these guys, significant strikes landed per minute, almost dead even. Both are at a little over five. Significant strike accuracy, both of them sit around the 55% mark, right? The difference comes in the takedown average. Poirier, on average, about two takedowns, a little less than two takedowns per fight. And then takedown accuracy, which is, here's the weirdest thing, is that Conor actually has a higher takedown accuracy than Dustin Poirier. That being said, submission averages are higher for Poirier, obviously. My concern with both of these gentlemen is that I don't know the motivation level of either one. We talked about before in the second fight that Connor's rolling up in a yacht. He's got $500 million in the bank. How motivated are you to go out and get in a fist fight, right? And he comes out, he's talking about the love of the game and being with his family and seeing the twinkle in his wife's eye and the shine in his kids' smiles and all this stuff, right? And you think about yourself, well, that's why you worked so hard to begin with, right? That's why you were the Mad Hatter for a long time, was to provide this life for them. And then they got it. So now you have to reinvent the motivation, right? Reinvent the hunger. You've been the champ. You've been to the top of the mountain. You've climbed down off the mountain. How motivated are you to climb back up it again? How many people summit a mountain more than once? Most people only summit a mountain once. They see the obstacle, they conquer it, they climb back down, and they just tell people, man, I did that. They don't go and do it again. That's what sets great fighters or great athletes apart from all-time greats, because all-time greats look at that mountain and go, I want to climb it better this time. I want to climb it faster. I want to climb it with some sort of challenge. Great athletes do it once and then they go, that was cool, man. That was cool. I'll do that. Yeah, I was like that. I like that. So we have Connor, and he did that, and he accomplished everything he wanted to do. Everything, except I think one time he said he wanted to win belts in three different weight classes. So if that's maybe a motivation, he hasn't done that. But outside of that, he's accomplished everything that he's wanted to accomplish. And he's made all the money, all the accolades, all the fame, all the fortune, everything that's come with it. Everything that guy has ever said he wanted to do, he has done. And that becomes incredibly hard to go out and get in a fist fight and find that grit, find that dog, find that bite that you need to get it done. And we saw that in the second one. Now what concerns me is now Poirier is talking like Dust or like Connor prior to the second fight. He's talking about, oh, you know, I'm a prize fighter. I'm in it for money. I'm in it for the, like, you know, I want to set my kids up. I want to do this. I want to do that. You know, I'm fighting for something bigger, the Good Fight Foundation. I'm set, you know, we're doing all these things. It's for the community. It's so on and so forth. When you get too philosophical and get in your own bullshit too much, you get knocked out.
Yeah.
Like, I know that the first fight, Dustin fought poorly because he was so angry. And in the second fight, he fought better. And I think he fought better, one, because he was more mature, but also because Connor was sleeping on a yacht. So I think there's a interesting, you know, north-south dynamic of magnetism right there where they want to be close to each other, but they can't. I think that there's some of that. But also, you now have Dustin that's made more money than he's ever made in his life, right? Got a nice house. Kids getting a little bit older. Wife's, you know, they got their own stuff going on. Is Poirier doing road work? Is he doing a ton of road work? Is he getting it in? Like, is he getting it in the way he needs to get redemption? Because he already got redemption, right? So he was fighting for redemption the second time. He was fighting for the paycheck. He was fighting for legacy. Well, you beat Connor now. You have it. You have it. And then you don't fight for the belt. You forego the belt to get a bigger payday. So you've already said the belt's not important to me. I want the money. I want the money. So I question the motivation of either man, even though both of them seem to be motivated by money. How hard is the work being done? What's the level of the work being done? That's what concerns me, because if Connor comes out and he loses this fight, he's done forever. For sure. And you have to wonder, is Connor okay with being done forever? Because if he comes out and he gets snuffed by Dustin again, he's done. It's done. Yeah. You can sell a card because it's Conor McGregor card, but you can't sell him as being a world beater maelstrom of violence like he was before. You can't, because he just got Big Brother twice in a row by Dustin Poirier. So he's either going to come out and he's going to beat Dustin and go on to fight Oliveira, whoever, and set the world on fire again, which in my opinion, even though I don't like the guy, would be great for the sport, or Poirier is going to send him into retirement. And then he'll be that guy that's going, you know, thanks for the cheese. I'll see you later. You know, that's really what this boils down to, because I don't know what else could possibly be at stake for him here. He's been there. He's done that. He's seen it all. And he'll tell you the same.
No, and I hate it because I always like to put my money in parallel with the analytics. But this is the one time where I want to watch the press conference. I don't really care about the weigh-ins. I don't care how drawn out Connor's going to look. All I care about is the press conference. And I say that because I want to see the demeanor that Connor carries. Is he going to come in and say, oh, best friends, oh, I'll take your hot sauce. It's all good. Like, we're all making cash. Or is he going to be like, hey, P-head, dude, I'm going to fuck you up. And it's going to happen, and get in his grill. And you see the fire. You see that motivation. If I see friendliness at an all even surface level piece, I'm out, dude. I'm taking Dustin. I think he clocks him in the later rounds. But if I see Connor, I see that go back to the drawing board. You got to remember, this is a guy that trained for how many months for Manny Pacquiao and completely dismissed any type of leg kicks, any type of grappling, Floyd purely Mayweather boxing.
Yeah. Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, I thought it was for the Pacquiao fight. No. Wait,
he was training. There was an idea of Pacquiao being on the table. Okay. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And that's
motivation
from boxing was. So,
my bad. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I just think that he's more well-rounded. He's always good in the run back. I'm taking plus money. How can you not take plus money on Connor, dude?
Well, here's the other thing too, is that I think that I don't think Connor have if trash talk is your catalyst, then go Poirier, because Connor doesn't have it anymore. He's not angry, he's not bitter. He doesn't have that portion of. I mean, think about the only he just started trash talking, right? We're 4 days out, 5 days out. He just started trash talking now. And the first bit of trash talk he releases is the recycled stuff he used from the first time. P-head and hillbilly. That's it. Yeah. This is a guy that made his millions being a wordsmith, being a poet on the microphone. And your first instinct is to go back to the thing that you used the first time, which you could say is some sort of subtle genius. You're trying to harken back to some sort of nostalgic in the head type thing. But I really think that I thought P-head and hillbilly were lame the first time. They're even worse the second time around.
He's had some good ones recently. I'm a businessman. I am the businessman.
Yeah. But that was years ago.
Oh, I thought that was new.
I think he's just recycled again. If trash talk is your catalyst here, go Poirier, because he's not angry enough. He doesn't, again, the fire, it's fire. You do know Nate is waiting in the wings for Connor if he loses, right? Yeah, Nate's always in the wings because Nate wants the Connor fight again. Absolutely. And truthfully, I think Connor might be the only fight that Nate can win right now. To be honest with you, I think it's the only fight that Nate could possibly win. And even then, he would be a massive underdog. Unless Dustin goes out there and sleeps Connor right away. There's quite a few props. Alternative lines for over-unders are juicy. It's at 1.5 right now. 2.5 looks good. 3.5 looks good. Recording knockdowns, recording, like, will they bleed, touch gloves. All of those are available right now. There's quite a few different ones. One that you might be interested in, will fighters touch gloves? Is it a plus 300 for no? So with the current, Mr. Rogers style attitude of the second one, they've got it at a minus 700 that it's going to be a yes, and up coming back at a plus 300 that it's no. If Connor continues to ramp up the trash talk, that might be something to look at. That might be a good opportunity for some plus money here. I would look at alternative lines. 2.5 seems good for me. 3.5's out there. 3.5 showed up in the chat as well. 3.5 super safe, but you're not going to get a super big return on it. 2.5's good because it puts you midway through the third round, and I don't think we'll get past that. No. I don't think this is a war of attrition. Big things that concern me if you're Dustin Poirier is that even in the second fight, he was getting hit a lot. I was one of the few people that maintained a position of adamancy that in the first fight, I thought Connor hit the back of Dustin's head several times. The first shot that stunned him and had him fall down was behind the ear, and then the two subsequent blows after that were behind the head. In the second fight, Dustin still got hit yet again, and said it so himself, one or two more if they had landed a little bit more flush or a little bit harder, he would have been in real trouble. Something to consider if you if you're on the Connor camp. If you're Team Connor, Poirier is a much better mixed martial artist than Connor McGregor. He's probably he's a better mixed martial artist. I mean, he's got better jiu-jitsu, he's got better wrestling. I would say that the boxing's probably on par, but again, this isn't boxing, this is MMA. And if you are more interested in the boxing of somebody than MMA like style striking, there's this great sport called boxing that I suggest that you watch. As far as the hands go, I think Connor's a more creative fighter, Dustin's the more technical fighter. If that's really kind of the meat and potatoes of it. So
gun to your head, money line.
Gun to my head, money line, based on what we've seen, Poirier. But sneaky, weird feeling, Conor McGregor knocks him out in the first round.
I'll go Conor.
Listen, it made me super upset if he did, but I'm betting wise, I like Poirier. I like under 2.5 alternative line more than anything else. And I think I'll probably just play that alternative line under 2.5 and just hope for a finish, because I can't. The heart and the head are too divided on this one.
All right. That sounds good.
All right, Mary.
Hey, I'm probably in the minority here, but I am more excited about the prelims than I am the main card, dude.
Well, here's something real quick. Do you want to talk about props? Poirier by KO is at +170. McGregor by KO is at +115. You play both guys by knockout and just hope that there's no submission or it goes to decision.
That's smart.
I like plus that. Money on both sides. Just roll it.
Yeah.
Just roll it. Play both sides. Meh. Or under 2.5 alternative line. Okay. All right. Let's run through these prelims real quick. We're coming up on an hour here and we don't want to run too low, too over. All right. Yozong Hu taking on Alon. Amadovsky at 8-2, Hugh at 3-2, 120 coming on Hugh, -140 coming on Amadovsky. What do you feel here? How do you think it gets done? What's going on?
Yeah, dude, this is a tough one because I feel like this is a pink slip fight right here. Both fighters are on what, 2 fight lose skids. Yozong, he's super green, dude. He's 3-2, you know, he's lost his last two, like I just said.
I think he's 6'1" or something, isn't he? He's a big ass Asian dude. Yeah, 6'3".
He hasn't fought in 3 years.
It's true.
He loves his jab. He kind of lets others kind of control the octagon, though. So it's kind of a weird thing. Like, usually someone that exercises their jab dictates the pace because they're the more volume, you know, kind of moving the fighter around. He doesn't. He utilizes his jab, but he's always working off his back feet. So he gets pushed up. You get someone that's a little bit more bullish, a wrestler, let's call it. Amadovsky, dude, he's on the 2-fight lose skid. He's a bite down on your mouthpiece type fighter, though. You know, we saw that in the John Phillips fight. It was just fucking swinging for the fences. I'd be nervous for a guy that's going to be using his jab and want to fight someone that's going to want to do a firefight. I like Amadovsky. I think it's going to be hard for him to close that distance with someone that's that much of a reach and that tall of a dude. So I like over 1.5. The 1.5 is literally there because Amadovsky, people think he's an absolute psychopath. But I don't think that Yozong is going to allow him to close the distance that quickly. So I like over 1.5. And if I were to go money line, I'm going Amadovsky.
I like Amadovsky because he looks like a big ass Marlon Moraes.
That's fair.
He doesn't fight like him, but visually he just looks like, yeah, if you just put Miracle Grow on Marlon Moraes, that's what he looks like.
That's cool.
Just saying. Listen, man, I don't have a dog in this fight at all, man. I really, neither one of these guys are showing up on my bet slip. Both of them are on 2-fight losing streaks. This is a filler, you know, a guy that has a record of 3-2. I don't care if you're 205 pounds or not. You should not be fighting in the world's most premier organization. I won't give you any of my attention.
No.
All right. Zlaga Zumagulov taking on Jerome Rivera. Jerome Rivera at 10-5. Boy, Zlaga Zumagulov is at 13-5. You know me. I love me my Zlagas. Pretty big favorite here, though, if I'm being honest, at a -310. I love him. I don't know if I'm -310 love him, though. Jerome Rivera +260. I stand by my statement. I've said it every time we've had Jerome Rivera show up on our ticket. I do not believe that Jerome Rivera is a UFC-level talent, man. I will stand firm and die on that hill. I don't think he's here. He's a young guy. He can get there, but he is not there yet. Zhumagulov should win this fight, and I'll be using him as a parlay piece, but I'm not looking at a straight money line, looking at 2 and 3 fight parlays with Zhumagulov as an anchor.
A lot of people are throwing cash the over 2.5 in Zhumagulov by decision. I think this is a spot you can get Zhumagulov by KO, dude. I really do. I think Jerome Rivera is a fragile human being. He is fragile, dude. His chin is super suspect. Yes, he's going to have a 6-inch reach advantage, but he's a guy that doesn't even really know how to utilize that 6-inch reach advantage. Usually, he's a jiu-jitsu guy at a certain level. He wants to utilize that jab to create some space to shoot in, try and get a single or double, get it down. He doesn't do that. He kind of just jabs out and then just receives a, you know, a punch on the back end. So I think Zhumagulov, who mixes up really well, who's got good cardio, will mix in legs, work it upstairs. I think he could KO. I think under 2.5 here is a great play. I think the line is appropriately set at -310 because I just don't think it's going to be that competitive.
Gotcha. All right. Brad Tavares taking on Omari Akhmedov. Weird spot for these guys, to be honest with you, on the early prelims. I would have liked to have seen them a little bit higher up on the card, but this is a pretty thick card, so I guess it makes sense. Maybe above Jessica Eye, Jennifer Maia, which we're going to get to, or maybe in the Trevin Giles, Driscus Duplessis spot, but it doesn't really matter at this point. Omari Akhmedov at 21-5. Brad Tavares at 18-7. Tavares at a -165. Omari Akhmedov at a +140 here. 18-7 on Tavares. He looked fantastic his last fight out, man. He looked almost reinvented. We lost a bunch of money on that fight, to be honest with you. I was all aboard the freaking Antonio Carlos Jr. train. I thought Carlos, the old shoe face, would go out there and get it done, and he looked like absolute dog shit. And that fight happened to have happened on the Poirier McGregor 2 card. Ooh. So here we are, Conor and Poirier run it back, and Brad Tavares is on this card again, and I'm going to look for him to get another W, -165. You know me, I love my Caucasus Mountain Warriors. I love my Russian wrestlers, but Omari Akhmedov is going to have a hard time on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, you said it earlier with the Yana Kuzmichaeva fight. You said Yana is a type of chick who will make the fight super boring and does not give a shit. Omari Akhmedov is the exact same person.
Oh, for sure, 100%.
He will grind you into oblivion, a guy that's got a 49% takedown accuracy, and he's a leech, dude. He will Khabib-style just smother you and lay there and hold position. He'll get boos from the crowd. He does not give a shit. The problem is, and where a lot of people think Brad Tavares is going to get the upper hand here, is with styles like that, you drain the cardio tank very quickly. Yeah. Brad Tavares is a guy that has got a lot of volume. He's a decision king. He can pepper you like crazy, wear out that cardio, and he's got pretty decent takedown defense. So I think if he can negate the takedown, pepper him on the feet and take him apart on the feet like he should get the decision here. I think that, you know, the safest play is obviously over or decision. You're getting over 2.5. I think at a -200, so it's not the most juicy line, but put those two together, Brad by decision, you get some value out of that for sure.
Yeah, I like Tavares for sure in that spot. All right, Jennifer Maia taking on Jessica Eye. Jessica Eye to +155. Jennifer Maia to -180. Oh, man. Women's underdogs, baby. It's science. Jessica Eye. I know you love Jennifer Maia. Jessica Eye is a poor man's Caitlin Chookagian. Just jab, pepper, yell, scream. Don't do much. Think you're doing everything. Jennifer Maia, probably better hands. Definitely better on the ground. Jennifer Maia by sub, maybe.
Yeah.
Jessica Eye by decision. Jessica Eye +155. I mean, I'm again staying true to my word. I will take Jessica Eye because she is a +155 women's underdog and science. But stylistically, Jennifer Maia should win this fight. My only concern if you're Jennifer Maia is output, cardio, and if you can't execute your game plan, what does plan B look like?
Dude, I mean, you're in my head right now. It's either I by decision or Maia by sub. I think that I cut and dry. She's got shitty takedown defense, dude. She doesn't know what to do on the ground. She can out-muscle Maia, and we've seen that happen before when Liz Carmouche fought Jennifer Maia. Someone that's stronger and more bullish can out-muscle her, negate takedowns, and make it ugly. But, you know, without muscling, you have to have good takedown defense, and Jessica Eye does not have that. She will accept bottom position. Jennifer Maia, I picked her to beat JoJo for one reason and one reason only: jiu-jitsu. I think jiu-jitsu is such a cornerstone in women's MMA. If you have that, you are a dark horse. Mm. I think Jennifer Maia has legitimate jiu-jitsu, and she is someone who, were if you know, everything hits the fan and she's getting peppered from the ground, she'll just say screw it and try and dive for a leg. And I will take that and hope that she, you know, cashes for my money. I'm going to go Maia by sub. I think that's a really solid play. I by decision, but I just don't see that happening. Jennifer Maia is going to be the more youthful fighter, and I think she's going to be stronger in every facet, except for maybe I think Jessica Eye does have better hands.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Driscus Duplessis at 15-2 taking on Trevin Giles. Trevin Giles is at 14-2. How do you feel about this, man? Oh, gosh, I freaking hate this fight, if I'm being that honest with you. Duplessis at a minus 110, Trevin Giles minus 110 as well. So essentially pick and fight over running arounds at 2.5. Every time I bet on Trevin Giles, I lose.
Dude, you in the world, man.
Every time I bet on him, I lose. Every time I bet against him, I lose. I don't know what to do. It's if I'm on Team Trevin, I lose. If I'm against him, he costs me money. I can't touch this guy. I don't want to touch him. I don't know what to do with him. He doesn't appear to have a second gear. He doesn't appear to know when he has an opponent hurt. Doesn't appear to have a go button, right? Wins over Roman Dolidze, who we love, but you know, knockout over Bevon Lewis and gifted a freaking decision win over James Krause in a fight that he easily lost. It just puts me in a position where I don't know how to bet him. Now, if you're Driscus Duplessis, you look at his fight against Marcus Perez, and I don't think he looked good in that fight against Marcus Perez until he caught Perez and changed the outcome of the fight. I can't touch Trevin Giles, man. I can't. And then I don't feel confident enough on Duplessis because I thought he looked like crap against Marcus Perez. So I can't touch this fight. I can't do it. Not in good conscience, I can't touch it.
Well, that's fair too, because I don't want to say someone has a padded record, but yes, you beat Marcus Perez. Marcus Perez isn't even in the UFC anymore, dude. He was cut for a reason. So your quality of opponent is exponentially lower than what you're getting in Trevin Giles. Trevin Giles on a 3-5 win streak, but debatable? Yes, dude. He lost that James Krause fight. You and I both know that. He doesn't have that extra gear like you're talking about. He's got jab. He's got good lateral movement, but in the later rounds, he loses it. And he's susceptible to a lot. We saw that in the Gerald Mershok fight, you know, getting subbed. Now, granted, anyone, you know, versus Gerald Mershok is probably going to get subbed. But in those later rounds, he wilts and is way more vulnerable. Everyone's all high and mighty on Driscus, but I just don't see it. He's got a good guillotine, so maybe we see a little sub action there. I don't know, but I have to go Trevin Giles. You just based on quality of opponent.
I just can't take him, man. I can't, so... I will forego that just so your bet lives on. All right.
That sounds fair.
Probably the fight I'm the most excited about, if I'm being dead honest with you. Ryan Hall, 8-1. Ilya Topuria, 10-0. Freaking love this fight, man. Ryan Hall plus. Fight. Yeah, it's the best fight. This is premium matchmaking right here. Yeah. Ryan Hall plus 195, Ilya Topuria at minus 230. I wish that this fight was at pick'em odds just to make it that more juicy. Over under on rounds at 2.5. I'm on Topuria. Just for a myriad of reasons. Obviously, the level of jiu-jitsu that Ryan Hall possesses in his body is one thing, right? And there are levels to jiu-jitsu black belts. And Ryan Hall is of the highest pedigree possible. Ilya Topuria possesses a decent black belt, like level jiu-jitsu. He is very, very competent in that regard.
Right.
But he has great wrestling as well, which I love. Because in my opinion, and you know this,
yeah,
it's not surprising, mate, elite wrestling shuts down elite jiu-jitsu. It just does. I know you're a jiu-jitsu guy. You don't want me to say that out loud, but elite wrestling will shut down elite jiu-jitsu if you cannot be effective in your attacks. As long as they're dry, first 4 minutes of this fight, Ilya Topuria is in real trouble. Outside of 4 minutes, it's the Topuria show, however he wants it. He'll be slippery. They'll be sweaty. I think he'll be just fine. He's got to watch his legs. He's got to watch his heels. He's got to watch his knees. outside of that, I think he's fine, man. I really think he's fine. I'm not trying to downplay the skill of Ryan Hall. Ryan Hall could win this fight. And a lot of the people in the jiu-jitsu community think that he's going to. He's going to take the O from Ilya. And I believe that you are going to tell me that you think that that's going to happen. But the hands are better on the Teporia side. The wrestling's better on the Teporia side. The cardio's better on the Teporia side. The only thing that's not better is the jiu-jitsu. And can Ryan Hall execute the one thing that he needs to win the fight? Can he do it? Because if he can't, there is no plan B. There is no plan C. We're done. He's got one thing to win this fight. He's essentially a 145-pound Ronda Rousey armbar. He's got one thing to win this fight. That's it. That's all he's got. He's got one thing to win it. Jiu-jitsu. That's it.
Dude, he doesn't have just one sub. He has a book of subs.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying he, in and of himself, is the an embodiment of 145-pound Ronda Rousey armbar. One method to victory.
So I totally agree with your sentiment that wrestling is maybe the more superior facet of mixed martial arts as it relates to it is. And it's indicative as it relates to the amount of champions there's been. I think wrestling's number one, jiu-jitsu's number two, Muay Thai's number three. Mm. There's been more wrestling champions in the UFC than any other facet. Understandable. Here's the thing though. Ryan Hall is also like Rain Man smart, dude.
Sure.
He is not going to engage. He is like we just talked about Omari Akhmedov, you know, getting booed for holding top position. Ryan Hall, knowing that he's going to get pieced up in the boxing realm, will literally sit down and invite to guard.
Sure.
He will not do anything else. He doesn't. He flops on his back and sits. He will get booed from the crowd. T-Mobile Arena will be absolutely irate. But here's the thing, Teporia on a big stage like that, is he going to have the stamina and believe in his own game plan enough to stay away? Or is he going to get invited down? If he gets invited down, it's a snake around you. This is a guy that can literally rip off your heel, rip off your knee, rip off an arm. It's jiu-jitsu levels to in a different degree, dude.
Sure.
This is a guy, well, people joke Tony Ferguson, oh, Imanari roll, freaking 10th planet. Dude, Ryan Hall, you could blink an eye and he's got you on a limb. The only thing that makes me a little bit nervous is Ryan Hall hasn't fought in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't engaged in a firefight. He hasn't been clipped in a minute. How will he react? Will he immediately dive for legs or will he feel it out a little bit? Ryan Hall is going to win this fight just on the fact that he's going to invite Teporia into a fight that he doesn't want to partake in. Teporia, I can totally see him engaging in what Ryan Hall is putting out there. 100%.
I honestly think this becomes a BJ Penn style situation. If you expect Ryan Hall to win, he's going to come out and immediately sub him. It'll be not like first 10 seconds sub, but it's in the first 3 minutes of the fight. If he's going to win, like he's going to come out, he's going to immediately get a hold of something. There'll be a weird mad dash scramble. He's going to grab a hold of something, arm, leg, neck, something, and tap him out without breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
If you can cut up, beat up, lump up a Ryan Hall, you can win the fight. There's a certain level of mental fortitude, grit, determination, all of that, that comes with being a master of any craft, because you have to be self-deprecating to become a master of anything, whether it's painting, jiu-jitsu, model ships, business. I don't care. You have to have something in you, a fire within you that you're constantly trying to extinguish or satisfy in order to become a master. Right. So I think that Ryan Hall has that in him somewhere, but it's up to Teporia to make him doubt his belief that he can continue to feed that fire. It's up to Teporia to be the bucket of water to extinguish that. Because as of right now, Ryan Hall has come out and he's implemented his game plan and he's won his fights and he's taken very little damage to do it. You've got to make him question whether or not he wants to be in there. You have to make him question whether or not what he believes to be a winning method is actually sustainable. You've got to make him think that. And the only way to do that is to either A, beat him at his own game or B, shut him down completely. So he's 100% ineffective in the things that he wants to do. It's a matter of which route Topuria wants to try to take. I think the more dangerous is to try to beat Ryan Hall at his own game. If you go in there with ego and let the ego win, ego always leads to death of self. And that's going to happen to Ilya Topuria if he goes in there with his ego first. Outside of that, I think he wins this fight. He's physically stronger. I believe he has a more well-rounded skill set. I think he should win this fight. It's very interesting. This is my most intriguing matchup on the entire card. I will be betting Topuria because I think he's going to win the fight, but this is a treat for fans. Not very often I tip my hat to the matchmakers, but I freaking love this fight.
Oh, this is a tip of the hat to UFC early days, dude.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. 100%. 100%. All right. What do we got? Two fights left? Yeah, we got two fights left. Nico Price taking on Michelle Pereira. 25-11 is Michelle Pereira. Nico Price is at 14-4. Man, let me tell you what. Yeah. Initially, I'm all on Nico Price, right? This fight gets announced, and I'm like, the hybrid, bro. It's the freaking hybrid. I love Nico Price. And then I start doing some research, and I start preparing for the show. Then I start watching Michelle Pereira's last fight against Chaos Williams. Then I go back and I watch his fight against Zalim Imadiyev, and I go, you know what? If Michelle Pereira comes out and he's calm, cool, collected, composed, and a little bit creative,
yeah,
in a full size octagon,
yep,
he's going to jack up Nico Price. He's going to jack him up.
Yeah.
Now Nico Price needs to make it a dogfight, but what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I think how many dog fights can Nico Price have, dude?
Right, right. Dog can only fight so many times. You're absolutely, yeah. That's a great point.
Dude, go back to when you look at the ones that he actually won, the Randy Brown, the Tim Means, even the James Vick, he was getting fucked up in each one of those fights. He was getting fucked up by James Vick.
Dude, James Vick got hands. He's this Texas Gold Gloves champion, bro. What are you talking about?
Yeah, dude. All right, you live and die that James Vick's your favorite fighter for sure.
James Vick got hands, bro.
I don't know. Nico Price takes so much damage in his fights, and yes, he possesses power on his back wherever. The most awkward KOs on the planet. But Michelle Pereira, as we've seen, this is the most redundant statement you're going to hear in any podcast analytical view of this. But he's gotten more conservative. Mm-hmm. His view of the octagon has gotten more narrow. He's not doing as many backflips. He's been much more conservative. He's picking his shots. He's utilizing a fight IQ. Nico Price just runs there and just freaking throws and maybe gets lucky every so often. Michelle Pereira, if he sticks to a game plan, should win this fight.
That's it? That's it?
I think over 1.5. I don't see Michelle Pereira putting Nico Price out. I think the dude's tough as shit.
Yeah.
Over 1.5. Pereira, I like that.
I will say this. What always fascinates me about people the most, or not the most, but one of the things that fascinates me about fighters in general is like genetic makeup. And Nico Price has the weirdest body composition I think I've ever seen. He's like equal parts arms and legs, but his chest torso area is like this small. And he's got a big head. And he's cartoonish looking almost, as if like you were going to like draw a muscle guy like when you're 12, you know, like you're making your own comics. That's what Nico Price looks like. And he's like 0% body fat. And he's got a million kids too, right? And then they spend him on man for smoking some reefer, which real quick, let's talk about this for a second. The Olympics are coming.
Here we go. She's got pulled from the relay.
The Olympics are coming.
Yep.
And I love the Olympics. I'm not a big fan of what's going on right now because this is going to be like the most woke Olympics ever. But normally, anytime that the United States of America gets to compete on a world stage, your boy is, I'm there, man. I think I've even said it on the show before. Yeah. The last Olympics, like the commercials, like, dude, I'm teary eyed. I'm cutting onions in my house watching the commercials for the Olympics.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, seeing any athlete win, stand up there, gold medal draped around their neck, flag, Star Spangled Banner playing. Oh, I'm a mess. I'm a freaking mess, bro. Every time it happens, I'm like, my wife's like, we've won 24 medals so far. Are you going to do this every time? And I'm like, yeah, every time. Like, I got to hydrate. I'm crying every time. Anyway, all that to say this, I'm excited for the Olympics. That being said, one of the places where we excel is we've got some fast ass women, and they took Sha'Carri Richardson off for smoking reefer. Can we please at some point in time, preferably now, get past this? Like, can we not get past the fact like the cannabis as a whole is not a performance enhancing drug? It's not a performance enhancing drug. It doesn't do anything to help your performance at all. And here's the most asinine thing ever. You're talking about a runner who smokes. It's oxymoronic. Nobody cares about that. I just don't understand. And then you're going to tell her no. Now, it's not a race thing. Everyone's trying to make it a race thing. It's not a race thing. It's a idiotic rule thing. Because don't forget, people are, Michael Phelps. If Michael Phelps was black, this, it's not a race thing. Michael Phelps was smoking pot off, not 2 weeks prior or a week prior to the trial. Yeah, it's off campus. He's not. It's a week. It wasn't a week prior to the trials. And they talk about, Ryan Lochte, you know, said he was robbed, and then he actually wasn't robbed. Ryan Lochte should have been banned, I guess. If you want to ban somebody for being a dumbass, sure, ban him for that. I don't care what you do with that. But to compare apples to apples here, the Michael Phelps situation and the Sha'Carri Richardson situation are completely different. If you want to be upset about something, be upset about the fact that there's going to be a dude competing in the women's powerlifting from New Zealand. Shout out to New Zealand. I love you guys. We're number one there. We were number one there. We probably won't be after this. But you guys got a dude competing with the women. That's a problem. That's a problem. That's a problem.
And that's why we are officially sponsored by Game Up Nutrition, Nate Diaz's weed brand. Utilize the code PUNCH and get yourself. Nah, I'm just joking.
I was like, wait, what happened? You're breaking news to me.
Getting that cheese, bro?
now here's the thing, right? So Sha'Carri knew the rules and she broke them. They should have let her run, though. 100%. She 100% broke the rules. But in something like this, right? Something like this. Dumb rules are still rules. And when you get caught, you pay the price for it, right? We can acknowledge that. I mean, I speed. I drive over the speed limit. I'm not reckless. I'm not an a-hole when I drive, but I drive over the speed limit. If I get pulled over and a cop says, you know, I pulled you over, and my response is always the same. Yeah, I know why you pulled me over. Just write me your ticket and let's go. Like, we don't need to do any of this other thing. I don't give any time to that. Just you're impeding me. Give me my ticket or let me go. I don't care. I'm not playing your game. Let me go. Sha'Carri Richardson, same thing. You broke the rules. You smoked reefer. It's a dumb rule, but you got caught. I haven't seen any statement from her. Is she upset about it? Is she crying fair, foul, indifferent? No, everybody else is doing it because you know what? She probably knows. I did see one thing. She said, I smoked because something about her mom being sick and she wanted to medicate. She had high anxiety. Come on, man. Come on. That's it, bro. If you want to punish her, punish her, but something where you only get to compete once every 4 years and you take that away from her, working her whole life for that, and you take it from her because she just smoked something to calm down because her mom's sick. Yeah, you broke a rule, but come on, man, that's some bullshit. That's some bullshit.
You know who was high?
37 and a 35. Yeah, I broke the rule, but it's bullshit.
Dude, you know who was high as shit?
Who's that?
Carlos Condit taking a fight against Max Griffin, dude.
No. Don't you try to bring me back on the rails here. Don't you try to bring this back on the rails. All right. People's main event, Carlos Condit taking on Max Griffin. Two punch list alum getting after it here. We're on opposite ends, so I'm just going to go ahead and let you go, man. I will let you run wild, run free, do whatever it is that you want to do here. Do you want me to sound the alarm?
Sound it, dude. Then I'll be off for the races.
You sure?
Yep. Max Griffin has never looked better. Start there. Okay. He has never looked better. Dude, freaking knocking Ramirez's ear off into the freaking, I don't know, back row. Then he gets like 50K bonus on Kanon's song. Dude, he's been looking amazing with his hands. But here's the thing, dude. Training at Team Alpha Male. Are Team Alpha Male guys? I'm sorry. Are they known for their hands?
This no, team alpha not. Male shit, man.
They're gosh, not. They stuff, happen man. To be known for what you believe is the most elite MMA trait to have, and that is called wrestling, dude. Mm-hmm. Now, Carlos Condit, sure, he's been on a little win streak. Fought Matt Brown, decision, guy's 40 years old. Oh, fought Court McGee, decision, dude's 36 years old. Mm. Fought guys on the back end of their careers, does not know how to negate the takedown, never has known how to negate the takedown. He's a slice, used to be the slicing guy, dice guy up in the clinch, dude, freaking making things bloody. Not like that anymore. He's a point fighter now, moves around the cage. And you have someone who possesses more power in their hands, who's going to mix it up, who's going to have better cardio, and is just way more well-rounded. Carlos Condit looked good when he fought guys 5 years ago. He has not fought anyone that is truly of relevance right now. Max Griffin has been fighting the prospects. He has been mixing it up, and he has been showing the elevation in his game in every facet. Dude, minus 185 is not deep enough. Watch this thing get more into the minus 200s as fight gets closer.
This is hard for me because I like Max and I don't want to be disrespectful because there's a great chance he's going to hear what I have to say.
I said that, dude, Carlos could turn this on too. Sorry, Carlos. Still love you. I like your coffee.
Max Griffin's the garbage man. He's a blue collar worker that takes out the trash. The guys that the UFC isn't sure what to do with, the guys that the UFC isn't sure whether they're going to cut or keep, and they want to go ahead and test them or see them or get them the hell out of there, they feed them to Max Griffin.
Not true.
That is 100% true. And Max beats them and he sends them on their way exactly as he should do. He is a rightful, dutiful soldier that does exactly what the UFC brass wants him to do. He filters the wheat from the chaff and separates them adequately and lets people see an accurate metric of their skill set. That's what Max Griffin does. I'm sorry. All skill sets being equal, I think that Carlos Condit is a more skilled mixed martial artist. And when I look at fights and I look at the way styles make fights, this, I feel like I can feel Max getting mad here.
Yeah, rightly so.
I feel like Carlos should be able to get this done. The only way that Max gets it done is if he comes out there and executes, as you call it, a team alpha male style wrestle heavy approach, which I don't think he will do. I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's going to want to show what he's been working on in the gym, and he's going to want to throw hands with Carlos Condit, which would be a freaking mistake. And we've seen Max get rocked before. Max is hittable. He's not Muhammad Ali. He's not out there like Tyson Fury moving his head around. He's not floating like a butterfly. When he hits you, it stings like a bee, but he doesn't float like a butterfly. At times, he's shown himself to be rather hittable. I think that Carlos Condit can hit him. Carlos Condit's stiff too. I'm not saying that, you know, Carlos Condit's out there being water. I don't think he's Bruce Lee. But dude, I feel like Carlos gets this done. You're gonna have to mend this relationship with Max, but I feel like Carlos gets this done, man.
Dude, the whole taking out the trash thing, dude.
That's what he is. That's a good thing. I meant it as a compliment.
No, I understand. I understand your analogy or whatever it was. Yeah. But dude, he's been on the wrong end. We've said this numerous times. We said it when he was on the show. Dude, he's been on the wrong end of split decisions, whether the Thiago Alves, the fight, the Alex Oliveira fight. He's been on the wrong end of quality competition losses, dude. Carlos Condit in his past two fights prior to that was the lengthiest layoff of all time, has not shown himself to fight quality competition, dude. Max Griffin has fought prospects, call him trash, whatever. And then prior to that, he was cutting his teeth and losing controversial split decisions to absolute killers. Like, I mean, come on, dude.
I don't know, man. I mean, again, it seems like they use him as the metric, right? Brahimaj, right? Gone. Mike Perry's still around. Eric Montano, gone. But the guys that have beat him, Colby Covington, AZ Dos Santos, Curtis Millender, but Millender's gone. He went PFL. Alves beat him, but he's gone. He went bare knuckle, but Morono and Alex Oliveira are all still around. So it's like they use Max as the garbage man, right? Like, if we don't want you here anymore, we're going to let you go. And if we think that you're talented, we're going to put you up against a guy like Max because he's very good at telling us where you're at. That's just, even in his losses, he looks good. I'm not saying like he's not going out there and getting shut out by anybody. He's a very talented guy. But if Carlos Condit is going to stay in the UFC, he's got to beat Max Griffin. And if Max Griffin beats Carlos, Carlos is gone, which is another bag of trash being taken and put in the dumpster. He's not fighting cans, but he is doing the dirty work. Like, he's a grinder. He's the hitman. He's the dude with the ice pick in waiting for you in the shower. He's the one getting his hands dirty for the UFC. He's taking out the ones that they don't want anymore.
Right. This is exactly that spot. Carlos, dude, fights. Dude, prior to the Cor McGee fight, he hadn't fought since 2018. And he was on a, what, four-fight lose skid? Yeah. And then he fights two guys on the back end of their career, like, and goes to decision with them. Sure. Max Griffin's been active, dude. The two fights he talked about before that was 2019 and 2020, and then most recent. So, like, he's been active. He's getting the reps, and he switched camps. He's gotten exponentially better.
Right.
I just don't understand how you can make a case for a guy on the back end of their career who's fought other guys on the back end of their career and hadn't fought prior to that till 2018. It just makes zero sense.
But here's the thing, though. Listen to the argument you're making. He lost four in a row, took 2 years off, and then won his last two fights. What a jump!
No, you can't say that, though, because those weren't real fights, dude.
They were real fights. You think Cort McGee wasn't out there actively competing? Do you think Matt Brown wasn't out there
active competition? Absolutely not.
Both of those gentlemen that you just mentioned are just won their last fight.
Okay.
So they're not out there just to get their paycheck. So to your point. Carlos Condit loses what, four or five in a row, has 2 years where he's nursing injuries and comes back and wins his two fights that he was booked to come back to. What other outcome would you expect from him? It's not up to him to determine the level of preparedness or execution of his opponents. It's on him to go out there and perform to the best of his abilities. And whether it's against Cort McGee and Matt Brown or not, you cannot deny the fact that Carlos Condit looked vintage in his last two fights. He came out, he executed well, and he won with taking relatively no damage.
You're on that.
Which is exactly what you should do if you are a guy that was a former interim welterweight champ, a guy that has beat the who's who, the guy that was on the top five of the welterweight division for damn near a decade. If you are Carlos Condit, you should be able to lose four in a row, take 2 years off, and come back and beat Cort McGee and Matt Brown handedly, which is exactly what he did. What other outcome do you want him to do? Like, what else?
I want him to do it decisively, dude.
He did. He washed them.
It was by decision.
He washed them. He didn't lose a round.
Dude, and then you go on to say that those two guys had wins. Are you kidding me? Matt Brown against Diego Lima, that was the biggest, like, trash pickup of all times. And then who did Cor McGee fight? He fought Claudio Silva, dude.
Again.
Trash.
Dude. Okay, agree to disagree. Agree to disagree here, man.
Max, dude, we love you, man. Please get this done. Take out the trash.
Oh, man.
I love you, Carlos, though.
Yeah, Carlos lost five in a row, too, not just four. He lost five. All right. I like both these guys a lot. I think we have a better relationship with Max than we do Carlos, but I have nothing but love and respect for Max. He knows that. We tell him all the time. So, but objectively speaking, from a betting perspective, I like Carlos at plus 160, dude. That's a wonderful spot. It's freaking wonderful.
Okay.
All right. Let's run through this bout order. Gun to your head, winner, loser. Okay. That's all we're playing. It's not indicative of our official bet slip, which will be available on our Instagram on Saturday, but this is just right now, Tuesday night, gun to your head. Who do you think wins a fight? Okay.
Yep.
Hugh versus Amadovsky.
Amadovsky.
I'll go Amadovsky too. Zamagulov versus Rivera.
Zamagulov by KO.
Just win or lose. Zamagulov. All right. Akhmedov, Brad Tavares.
Akhmedov.
I'm on Tavares. You're on Akhmedov. You're interesting. All right. Jennifer Maya, Jessica I.
Maya by sub.
Jessica I by decision. Trevin Giles versus Driscus Duplessis.
I'm taking Trevin Giles. I don't want to take Trevin Giles.
Yeah, I'll get Giles, but I hate it. Teporia versus Hall.
Hall by sub.
Teporia. All right. Pereira versus Price.
Pereira.
I'll go Pereira as well. Carlos Condit, Max Griffin.
Max Griffin.
Carlos Condit. Montino versus O'Malley.
O'Malley.
I'm on O'Malley as well. Kunitskaya, Aldana.
Yana Kunitskaya.
I'm on Kunitskaya as well. Greg Hardy, Tai Tuivasa.
I hate the man, but I'm taking Greg Hardy.
I'll go Tuivasa. Again, I just made a blood pact. All right. Stephen Thompson, Gilbert Burns.
Wonder Boy.
One Wonder Boy, but that's subject to change big time. Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor.
Oh, I will be having some proper 12 and watching him ride off into the sunset that is Charles Oliveira and a new shiny belt. McGregor. The lights are going to be too bright, dude.
I'll go. Oh, gosh. Every fiber of my being says take Conor, but I can't. Poirier.
Oh, it's disgusting.
It's subject to change. Under 2.5 is actually my real play. But again, gun to the head, money line. So yeah. Anyway, his Condit out wrestling a gas Brown wasn't vintage Condit. It's not Carlos's fault that Brown was gassed. So that point is irrelevant because Carlos is not responsible for the cardio of his opponents.
Yes.
That's irrelevant. I love you, but that's an irrelevant point because
erroneous on all counts.
Erroneous because Carlos is not responsible for the cardio of Brown. So I don't care that he out wrestled him. He should out wrestle a gassed Brown. If he didn't, then I would say that you have a problem here. So again, you can't tell me anything here. So anyway, all right. If you don't already do so, follow us on all social media channels at Punchless MMA. Go to Punchless MMA and don't just follow us at Punchless MMA everywhere. I'm getting everything mixed up here. We're there everywhere: Instagram, Twitter, email, whatever. If you want to support the show, the best way to support the show is by supporting our show sponsors. You can go to Stay Classy Meats, use promo code FIST and save 10%, or you can go to Allegiance Clothing and use promo code PUNCH and save 15% site-wide. Trey, I'm holding your feet to the fire here because you're dodging my text messages. And Roy, who Allegiance is his baby, is in here. I'm holding your feet to the fire in front of God and country.
Yep.
Are you going to send Roy a design for a t-shirt so we can get freaking t-shirts out to these people?
Maybe. I'm a wild card, dude. I'm a trailblazer.
Send him the freaking design.
Okay.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Let's do it. Let's get it done. Let's freaking get it done. But yeah, shout out to Allegiance Clothing and shout out to Tombstone Taylor Johnson. Appreciate you winning on Bellator the other day and making everybody look good. Anything else? You got anything else for the people?
No, besides the fact that make sure if Tai Tuivasa does win, guys, do a shoey. Tag Punchless MMA. Send it to us in a DM. And you have an opportunity to win big, dude.
Yeah. So like I said, we'll take the videos, we'll compile them together, we'll have everybody vote on it. The person that receives the most votes, we will send you a limited edition Punchless t-shirt that is no longer in circulation, and we'll buy you a sixer beer, whatever you want. And I'm not talking about no cheap Modelo like Trey stocks his beer fridge with. I'm talking about some triple IPA, whatever craft beer, sour, whatever kind of shit you guys are into. You can have whatever you want, man. It's on us. So, just if Tai Tuivasa wins, do a shoey, send it to us, email, Twitter, Instagram, doesn't matter. Let us know. Also, I guess we're on Facebook too, which I keep forgetting. We're on Facebook. I don't know. My grandma always says she sees our stuff on Facebook. So,
That's cool.
Until some of the stuff we post, but all right. Talk to you guys this week and this weekend. And then are you going to drink beers with me on Friday night? Talk about weigh-ins or no?
I'm a peacock, dude. Let me fly. And I say bye-bye and I will drink with you on Friday.
Excellent. All right. We'll see you then. All right, guys, be good to each other. We'll see you.